Boom. We are ready for spiritual concepts. I see your friend is right next door here with his beautiful golden retriever. He is certainly a very remarkable dog, isn't he? See him, Ellen?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. And he's just ready to be with his master, not necessarily to make his master a hard time like the other fellow's dog jumping at his ski sticks all the time. But this is training, too. This is training, and I'm sure this guy's done some training with his dogs there. And the dog has such a pure face, you notice that? Its stance is so pure. It has a beautiful spiritual concept of itself there. And of course, its hair has been coiffured beautifully, cut perfectly, so there's no straggling to it, no excess. Now that's a perfect golden retriever, isn't it? Now why is he showing so much love to that dog? Does he not have a wife to show it to? Does he not have a car to show it to? Does he not have a world to show it to? Or does he show it in all things?
He likes himself.
What's that?
He likes himself.
He likes himself. He likes himself, and he certainly exercises that and demonstrates that in everything in his life. And this is a beautiful thing. And you see, the dog is totally content to be with him. He doesn't feel like he needs to, you know, get in there and get more. He took his loving, and then he stood by and waits and very patiently, and he says, okay, whenever you're ready, I'm ready to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's loving dedication. Now, is that dog in any way, what do you do with a horse? Is that dog broken? That dog is gentled. Now, that dog could be, you know, all over you. It could be jumping and knocking you down. It could be doing all sorts of things if he were not brought up in a proper way, if he were not given a lot of love and a lot of direction and a lot of attention in the right way. You can see it in children who are pleasant to have around, and children who are pleasant to be around are ones who have been brought up with respect and love for themselves, respect and love for their family and for everything that they are. It's a difficult thing to do, because we see so much on television how the children are doing their own thing and being naughty and doing things that their parents are not proud of. And then we think that every child is like that. And of course they aren't. But what is your concept of a properly brought up dog? What is your concept of a properly brought up spiritual concept? Do you think that a spiritual concept is the standard thing that we talk about, the praying and worshiping and respect of others? Is that your spiritual concept? What is your spiritual concept? Is your spiritual concept one of loving yourself, realizing that within yourself is all divinity, realizing within yourself is everything that matters? Nothing else in the entire universe matters except what's within you. And within you, then, is the focus that you see what's going on around you. And when you have a perfect focus on what you see going on, because you're number one, because you're the only one that exists, and that's the hardest thing of all in our spiritual conceptualization, is to realize that we are the only one that exists, the only one at all. And that everything flows out from us. Everything flows out from our center. Everything flows out from who we are and what we are and what our goals are for ourselves and what our dreams are for ourselves. Everything stands from us alone. And you say, boy, oh boy, that's an egotistical point of view. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Like I tell you the story about the man with the four children standing on the edge of the river. I said five children. And standing on the edge of the river. And one child falls in the river. It's a fast-moving river, and the man cannot swim. So is he going to dive in that river and save that one child and leave his other four children fatherless in the process? because it's quite likely he won't be able to catch that child. He's already down the river half the way. Or is he going to move all the rest of the children back from the river and say, don't? But, Pa, is there something we can do? No, there's nothing we can do. Well, Dad, why did you bring us to a place like this where we could fall in the river? And why did you bring us here where we didn't know how to swim? See, those questions are not asked. That's not part of the statement. The statement is, should he dive in the river and throw away his life so he cannot take care of the four children that are left? Where are his values? If he's number one, he will realize that the children and himself come first, what he has standing before him. Oh, thinking about whether he should have been there in the first place with the children, whether he should have been near water when he can't swim, and things like that, that's another question. The only question that we're concerned with here is he using good judgment for himself? Is he number one? Because if he, why would he jump into the river to save a child that he couldn't save? Because he'd want society to think that he did his best. And society doesn't care. Society doesn't care. If he just said, one of our children went to the river, fell in, drowned, then that's a statement. One of our children fell in the river and drowned, and I couldn't get to save him because I didn't know how to swim. Well, you stupid jerk, you know. One of the children fell in the river and drowned because I couldn't swim, and I didn't dive in to try to save him, even though I couldn't do it. Well, you stupid jerk, why didn't you try to save him, you know? You see, if you make a statement, one of the children fell in the river and drowned, period, then there's no other discussion involved. There's no relativeness as to why were you there, what happened, what's all this. You see, when we keep our concepts down to the minimum, down to the bare minimum, and knowing that we are number one, knowing that we are the creator of our world, knowing that we are beautiful. I use that illustration because it's an emotional illustration, very packed with emotion, because you think, my God, the guy should have dived in. Even if he couldn't save the kid, he should have tried. He should have tried. Why didn't you try, you know? Well, there's no trying, because there was no possible way it could have been done. Now, could he see that child saved? Could he see that child brought to shore by some powerful swimmer downstream who sees the child in the water and dives in and brings him out? Certainly. Certainly. But that is another story too. The thing is, first, we're saying he's number one. First, we're saying that he has his opportunity to take care of his four children. First, he has that. Second, he would say, my child is saved. My child is caught by a stick downstream there and held up in the air by the stick, you know, and I just walk down the stream and pull him out. Give him a spanking, say, why did you go so close to the water? You know, get the rest of the water out of him. But these are things. These are things. And you say, well, Herb, you sure like to make up stories. You sure like to make up tales that have happy endings. You sure like to make up stories that make us sound like we're billionaires and millionaires and zillionaires, and that we got everything we want. We got our house that we want, our car that we want. We have our perfect lover. We got our perfect house that we can live in and have our dozen children and things like that. Isn't that great? Well, not really. It's only great if it fits your path, if it fits your concept of yourself. And that's why we have to be so aware of what our concept is. Now, what is your concept of yourself? Is your concept that you're number one and you're wonderful and you're beautiful? Is your concept of yourself that you are a success in everything you do? Is your concept of yourself that you are the first thought in your mind expressing itself? You see, it's very simple to stop and say, I am the first thought. But do you really believe you're the first thought? Do you really know that you're the first thought? Do you really act as though you're the first thought? And are you the first thought? Or are you maybe the second or third thought? What is your spiritual concept of yourself? Let's play from the physical to the spiritual. I am number one. I am the only person living on the face of the earth. Everything revolves around me. Everything is response to my word. My word brings everything into my experience. Okay, now those are all good things. Those are all good things. Now, let's take the next step. I am the universe. Okay. I am the universe. I am the allness. I am God. I am divine. You see, we step gently into those thoughts. What does it mean to be the universe? If you were the universe, what would it mean to you, Christina, to be the universe?
I am all.
All, yeah. But what do you conceive of beyond and encompassing all that we are? In other words, you are all that is created. You are all that is uncreated. You are undifferentiated matter, and you are the differentiated matter. You are the ideas that are expressed and the ideas that are yet to express. Sound good? Yeah, but you see, this is it. You're all. And if you're all, can there be anything beside you? And is everything a Christina?
Yes.
That sounds interesting, doesn't it? Everything is a Christina. So Sylvia sitting there is not a Sylvia, she's a Christina.
Yeah.
And is she a good Christina?
Yes. Sure.
I mean, everything you create is good, right?
Yes.
Okay, is this Gertrude Christina a good Christina?
Yeah.
What's wrong with Gertrude?
There's nothing wrong.
Nothing, that's right. And you see, when you go into your allness consciousness and your allness awareness and your universal beingness, everything you create is perfect, just like you are. Now, do you make mistakes?
No.
How could you make a mistake when everything you do because you want to do it? So, is there any good or bad in your world?
No.
Is there anything... Now, this one here is a little tough, and you may not be harmonious with this. Is there anything beneficial or non-beneficial in your universe?
No. All just is.
That's an interesting statement, isn't it? Is there anything beneficial or non-beneficial in your universe? No. All just is. Now, when you say that there's nothing beneficial, I mean, I know we talked about beneficial and non-beneficial, but anytime you say there's something beneficial or non-beneficial in your universe, you're saying it is not good or good. It is not beneficial, not desirable, and everything is desirable. Could you even think a thought that was not desirable? You're welcome. Now, could Greg think a thought that's undesirable? Why not? Why couldn't Greg think a thought that's undesirable?
Because there is nothing undesirable.
That's true too, but another statement. Because Greg is...
Me.
Greg is you, and he has no capacity to think anything undesirable. Now, could Anita think anything that is not harmonious with your thought system? Could Anita be more beautiful than you are?
No.
Could she be less beautiful than you are?
No.
You got a problem there, see? You're just plain beautiful. But you see, when you start working on your spiritual concepts, and you start working on them from this very high level, you leave behind those other concepts. You leave behind the concepts of dualism and humanism. And dualism and humanism are not very pleasant. They're not very comfortable. And the reason they're not very comfortable is that they're dualistic. And you think something can be right and something can be wrong. Like the human story is, something's right and something's wrong. Now, when Stefan let me smell his hand, what was that all about? Christina? He was letting me smell his hand after petting the dog. Now, was it a good smell?
Yes.
Well, it smelled kind of stinky.
anything is...
That's right. That's right. Always stand up for it. Anything is good. And the smell was good. It was a good smell of a dog. And it really wasn't stinky. It just was a dog smell. And have you ever smelled a puppy that just wakes up from a sleep and smelled their breath? Oh, it is just perfume. A puppy breath is just magnificent. And a puppy odor from their body after just being sleepy and you know, in their sleep attitude is just beautiful. And we don't often appreciate that. And little babies who've been sleeping are the same way. Now, why are little babies' breath so sweet?
So pure.
They are pure.
Well, why are not adults' breath sweet?
Because and they don't think they're pure.
They don't think they're pure, that's right. But now, what about you? What do you think?
I think I'm pure.
And what do you think about anybody else? Yeah. Now, when we hug and kiss in the morning and everyone hasn't had a chance to brush their teeth, is everyone pure?
Yes.
Have you, now you could say, Herb, are you speaking relatively or universally? Have you ever smelled anyone's breath that wasn't pure?
No.
And you never will. You see, from this moment forward, you're living in the spiritual concept. And the spiritual concept is pure. And good. Everything is pure and good. Everything is absolutely fantastic. So now, what sort of a life are you going to live from now on?
A pure one.
Yeah? You're going to live a pure life?
Well, from my point of view.
From your point of view, right? Yes?
Now.
Now. She's good at interpreting a foreign language, isn't she? Yeah. I just throw these foreign phrases out and she just whips them off in English like nothing. But no, now, everything is for the moment. Everything is for the moment. And so we have no past, present, or future. It's just this instant that we're in, this moment. Nice, huh? So now, how can you live in this attitude of this concept when all around you things are a little different? You don't see it different?
I see it good.
But everybody else says it's relative. What would happen if you went with that attitude into the relative world?
Huh? They don't realize that I'm... Or, no.
No, you have to... First present tense, positive,
I
now, yet.
I don't see a difference, and... then everything is pure.
You see, you didn't have to say, I don't see a difference. What would happen if you went into the relative world with this beautiful, positive, universal attitude you have?
I see only purity and goodness, perfection, because I am.
For you, the relative world wouldn't exist, would it? Mm-hmm. Because you'd be living in your universal consciousness. Now, what would happen if you lived in your universal consciousness? What would happen to the relative world? Now you can say that. It wouldn't exist.
It wouldn't exist.
It wouldn't exist. See, when you live in the pure consciousness, when you live in the absolute universal consciousness, the relative consciousness has no existence. It's a new thought, perhaps, maybe not so new, but it's a thought that if we could really work on it, if we could really build it into our belief system, we'd be beautiful. You'd walk into a store, and your first question wouldn't be, you don't have any chewing gum, do you? You don't have any peanuts, do you? And there's a whole rack of peanuts there. You don't have any soda water, do you? You know, this is what people do. This is the common phrase, and you'd go in there and you'd say, I see you have a wonderful selection of soda water for me. I see you have a wonderful selection of peanuts for me. And of course you have my favorite brand. And you'd say your favorite brand was XYZ, and she said, oh, I don't put those out front. I never get enough in stock for my special customers. How many bags did you want, you know? Right? We went in for the ginger ale and the cream soda and so forth. And I said to the lady, you know, someone said, do you have any ginger ale? She left the counter, waiting on other people, taking their money for gas and other things. And she came over and she says, now which size do you want? Do you want this size or do you want this size of ginger ale? And they were in separate areas. Took total time with us because we knew the ginger ale was there. We didn't say, you don't have any. We said, and where is the ginger ale? And she came over and showed us. You see, when you expect it to be as perfect as it is, then it is. When you expect it to be a problem, then it's a problem. Because there's nothing wrong with problems, are there? No. Every problem is what? A solution, yeah. Every problem is an is. And it has no goodness, no badness to it. It just is an is. So, when you go into the store and you say, I'd like to buy a jackhammer. You know what a jackhammer is? It's a hammer that breaks up the concrete. You know, and they'd say, well, I don't have one, but right down the street they rent them. You go into another store in the same city, next door to the store you're in, you say, I'd like to rent a jackhammer. They say, well, what do you think this is? This is a grocery store or a drugstore or a boutique or something. And they would, the first store was a grocery store or a drugstore or a boutique, and they said, just down the street. This store said, what do you think I am? Why would they bring that sort of attitude to you? Because you create them doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you create yourself even more so living on a spiritual level? Now, in first person present tense positive, living with the realization of the universal, right? And living with the attitude that whatever you think is right. What sort of a scenario would you give yourself living in this level here of among humans from your spiritual point of view? How would you think about that? How would Crackle Cree and Crackle Craw think about that? You are a divine being. Or let's just say you're an angel, you know, and you come down to earth. Now, how would you live?
With my angel attitude.
With your angel attitude. Now, what would your angel attitude be?
To see perfection.
And what?
Everywhere. I see perfection.
Perfection everywhere, right. Now, if you see perfection everywhere, what would the other people think about you?
I'm a beautiful angel.
Yes, they would. But would they also be perhaps jealous of you?
No.
Would they feel that you were superior to them because you're demonstrating all this goodness?
No, they can't be.
Isn't that neat? Now, could you act like that? Do you have the courage? Do you have the strength of character to act like that?
Yeah.
Why don't you?
I don't.
Well, that's great. Okay, now, since you do, what takes place in your world? Since you act like that, as that beautiful spiritual being that you are, what takes place in your world?
Perfect.
Do you have a perfect community in which to live?
Yes.
There's no problems in the community, huh?
No.
Is the forest always green?
Yes.
Are there sometimes leaves falling from deciduous trees?
Yes.
You know what deciduous trees are? Deciduous trees are trees that in summer have leaves and in winter lose them. It's just a natural thing, isn't it? Now, what if you were living in Camelot? What would happen in Camelot?
I think it's always spring. No?
Yes. What is it, Stefan? When is the rain allowed to fall in Camelot?
Winter.
At night.
Yeah.
And All right, smarty. How long is winter?
Only in the night.
No. Winter is from the last day of December to the first day of January. Yeah, that's what they said in the song, you know.
Oh, in that song.
In that song, yeah, yeah. It's called Camelot. But isn't that a charming thing?
Yeah.
And everything is glorious. Now, is that true? That's King Arthur. Have you heard the Camelot song?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You haven't, Sylvia? Well, where have you been sleeping? My goodness. Well, we'll have to play that for you. And then you'll play it again and again and again. It's such a nice one. But it has such a nice flow to it, too. Everything is beautiful in Camelot. And the flowers are always coming up, and all the sun is always shining at the right time. It's always warm and pleasant. People are always nice. Nice to each other. Nice to the king. Now, this is not a joke. Is there a place existing like Camelot?
Yes.
Irene, is there a place existing like Camelot?
Everywhere where I am.
Oh, you're so smart. That's right. Everywhere where you are. Why is that? That everywhere where you are is Camelot.
That's the only thought I have.
My goodness, that's right. Now, where did you learn to have it be the only thought you had? Does somebody put a time bomb in you or something?
I came out of the box like this.
Good for you. Good for you. You came out of the box like that. That's great. And that's true. That's true. We all, oh, come on now. We all were born like that. We all came out of the box like that. We all came right into life with that beauty. And you kept it, huh? Good for you. Good for you. Now, what about the rest of us? Did we keep it too?
What rest?
Very well done. Very well done. Very well done. Well, now, how are you going to be a benefit to the world?
By creating. By being.
There is no world.
Oh, not even a
girl. All right. No. If you're number one and the only one that exists, and there's nobody else here but you, how can you benefit the rest of the world? There's no world to benefit, is there? Yes? What's the frown on your face?
Nothing. I was just looking if the sun may blind you or not.
Oh, thank you. I mean, the sun was bright and cheery. How does she create the rest of the world? How does she handle the rest of the world? Anita?
After her liking.
There is nobody else in the world. She's number one and the only one.
No, it's me.
Yes? Gregor?
She doesn't exist. It's me.
What?
It's me.
What's you?
I'm the only one.
That's right. In her world, huh?
How about me?
Well,
after my life.
That's right. So now I'm talking to each of you separately because you're only here separately with me. There's only one person I'm talking to, just Irene now, and the rest of you don't exist. Then I'll talk to you, and then she doesn't exist. But how do you work with the rest of the people in the world?
There's no rest, there's no working, I just am.
All right, let me mess you up and help you. I am number one, I am the only existing person on earth. I am the rest of the world. I am all of life. I am perfect. And I don't need to help myself because I already exist with all. I hate to use the word I don't need to help myself, but the word was put out there. Are you getting the point a little bit?
Theoretically, yes.
Theoretically, well, you got to get it theoretically before you get it factually. some people take it to heart, and you take it theoretically, and some people take it factually. But the factual thing is usually the last thing that you take it as. So now, you're number one, right?
Yeah.
That you can conceive of? How can you conceive of being number one?
There's only me, so it's only number one.
Well, I'm pointing it out from this point of view. How did King Arthur know, Arthur is a young man, how did he know that baby squalled and wanted to be taken care of and wanted this and that and the other thing, when he had really never seen a child? He'd never been around babies.
He's himself a baby. He knows that from himself.
So you're saying that he is all, and he is a baby, and he knows how he acts as a baby. Well, well done. Well done. That wasn't what I expected from it. But that's well done. And is that true now? How would you act as Gertrude? Let's see how you play that.
I always act as me. And I might call myself with different names, but I'm always me.
Our concept of Gertrude is a little different. If we conceive of Gertrude as being a kindergarten teacher and so forth, you know, a special arts teacher and so forth, how would you do that? Can you conceive of creatures in your world playing different role models?
I am all these models, so mm-hmm. I play them all at once.
Mm-hmm. And that's true.
So I am Gertrude, I am a kindergarten teacher, I am the candle, I am...
Beautiful, beautiful. But is that still academic? Or are you getting closer to letting it be something deeper? Still a little bit academic, isn't
yeah.
it? Mm-hmm. But you see, the more you play with this, the less academic it gets. And the more you feel comfortable with it. When you stop and think, now, all of you, let's see, Ellen, we haven't played with you yet here for a while. Ellen is Ellen, and Ellen thinks, oh, yes, I think I'll create a little movie in my mind. And the movie in my mind will have Alias Diego and Ariel in it and lots of other people. Or she says, no, I have had enough of that movie. I will create the movie in my mind of the motorhome here and all the beings in the motorhome. And who's in charge?
Me.
Ellen. And what about the people who do these things for her? Ellen says, go and fix this bobbly-book. And so the person goes and fixes the bobbly-book. How could Ellen tell the person to go fix the bobbly-book if Ellen herself was not capable of doing it? If Ellen herself was not the person fixing the bubbly book.
As all is one.
Yeah.
And I have my creation doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what do you mean by your creation? I thought that.
It's my reflection, my creation. It's me doing it.
Yeah, that's
it's
it.
Me doing it as. Whatever
mm-hmm.
the name
mm-hmm.
is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's you doing it. It's you being it. And it's you, the dibbly-doop, you know. You're the problem, you're the solution, you're the allness.
Right.
And if you are this, then why are you creating other people to be part of it, to be playing that game? Hmm?
For the fun of the game.
For the fun of the game. And are you having fun?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, can we create a scenario, a movie script? Can we create a movie with these people in it and still have it be us?
It is always.
What does a director do in a movie?
He directs the movie. Right.
He tells all the people how to play the parts in the way he wants it to be played because the parts are him.
Mm-hmm.
People think they're playing the parts in the movie because it's the way that it was written by the writer in the book. But the director is creating you playing the parts as he is directing it.
Good thing they are doing.
But you see, this is very important for our spiritual understanding, because we are the masters of everything. We are the creators of everything. We are the beings of everything. We're the director of the universe. We're the director of every concept that comes into our world and every idea that comes into our world. And like Tsumoto said to Richard, said, okay, now take the Butch Cassidy, the Sundance Kid, and cut the film up and put the part here, the beginning at the end and the middle, and leave out some parts, you know, and just take whatever you want in there. And when you see it, you think, oh, that's an interesting film. You don't know that you're seeing a cut version. Mm-hmm. You don't know, well, the creator is creating a cut version in the first place. He's creating it only with what he wants. In one scene, it's a terrible scene where bad things happen, and he cuts it out. And another scene, they're doing some good stuff, some really nice stuff. And so he makes it three times as long. Why not?
Yeah.
But you see, this is what you, as the director, you as the creator, you as the universal you, who is the only being on the face of the earth, do. And when you think of that for yourself and for what you have created, you've done pretty well. You've come up with some pretty wonderful things. So, think on those things. They're very important to walking on our spiritual concept of being aware of just who and what we are. Okay, now let's try it from another focal point. What's the dog's name? The golden retriever, what was his name?
Kobe.
Okay. Was Kobe a good guy? Okay. Is Kobe a good guy?
Yes.
Is Kobe his own creator?
Yes.
Did he create this guy as his master, taking care of him? Is the guy really taking care of Kobe, or is Kobe taking care of his master? Is Kobe feeding his master? Probably. He delights his master, and he makes his master feel very comfortable. How does Kobe get food into his master's bowl? He barks or whatever. He creates it there. Does he take out the can opener and open the can? No. Does he have his master do that? Does he create his master doing that? Yep. You see, Kobe is just as much a total essence of life and a life force and an individuality as anybody else, as any other being. And yet we don't give him credit for that. So we really should give him credit for that, because we'd have some fantastic information if we realized that horses, dogs, cats, cows, pigs, monkeys, and whatever, all are the same way, doing beautiful things. And that's really, really, really quite something exciting.
So, what you say, animals, each animal is number one and the only one existing?
Did I say that? Why are you shaking your head no, Christina?
It's not.
What?
No, because he didn't say it.
No, I didn't say it, but what is the meaning of it? Actually, that's what the meaning is. The meaning is that the animal is as much number one and the creator of its world as we are the creator of our world. If I can say you are the creator and you are the only one in the world, the animal is the only one in the world. Do you think that the world doesn't revolve around Cody? When Cody lays down to sleep, what happens? He's in another dimension. When Cody gets up, what does he do? He says, arf, arf. He says, I'm really hungry. And his master says, oh, good. He creates his master being him. He creates his master saying, oh, good. He creates all of these beautiful things, but he's number one. Now, Is his master him? His master understands him perfectly. Why would his master not understand him? Does any dog master not understand it, the dog? We say yes, but it's only because the dog doesn't choose to understand the master. So it creates the master not understanding it, yes?
But if we say that everything is God,
everything
is God, but God expressing as a dog, as a tree, as a cloud, as a star, so what are we saying with this, that it is always complete in its expression as that? That's now referring to that animals are their own creators.
Yeah, go ahead.
So then everything which exists creates its world. Creates its world. Let's stay
right
there.
Right.
Creates its world.
Right. Because it chooses to be there.
Yeah, but I always thought that we, as in the game, as divine being, or in the play of human game, beings create the animals, create the trees, and so. But if the tree creates it, creates us, just
the
like the same,
tree
it would be the same thing.
Creates itself and creates anything in its environment.
Yeah.
It's tough to understand that. But the thing is God in its entirety in everything?
Yes.
And is God in its entirety in a tree acting as a tree? And does the tree create about it that which it desires about it?
Yes.
Why did Stefan's little tree create itself up on that rock all by itself?
Oh, because it had fun to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And what did Stefan do about it when it did that?
He crawled up, he climbed up to it.
Why did he climb up there?
He felt...
To have a story for my...
Essentially. But Stefan climbed up there because it was talking to him. He was hearing it. You didn't know that was there. And he climbed up there because he was impelled to climb up there, urged to climb up there.
Now, in the relative book, that we have a statement of that we human are the only...
Yeah. The art and science of wholeness, even.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have dominion over, and that's true, you have dominion over everything, over the tree, over the dog.
But that's the appearance of the game.
No, that is true.
That's true. The dog in itself has dominion over his world.
That's it.
No,
see,
I didn't mean that statement.
In the relative, you make the statement that mankind is the only one that has...
It knows itself and knows its divine nature.
Creative cause.
Right.
Creative cause.
And is conscious of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because all creation knows who it is and...
Now, what if I had said there, all creation is aware of its creative cause and conscious of itself? Boom! It would. Nobody would get past that page.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You have to build up from a foundation to that page. First, you have to build up to. You see, the world knows that it is the mankind is the only being that's important. I mean, mankind can go and slaughter and chop down trees and denude the land and kill the animals and kill the wheat and kill all the grains and the vegetables and stuff and eat them and think that that's perfectly okay. If you start taking man's okayness away from him in the very beginning of our courses, they would never get any further. Because what we do in our courses is outrageous. it moves people from the state of believing that the church is over them and that God is over them and something's outside of them that rules their life to something's inside of them that rules their life. Now, I could cover the whole thing at once if I wanted to, but it wouldn't do any good. And the only thing that we want to do is just to make sure that we first understand that we are the creative cause, and then we make the next step that everything is its own creative cause. You see, this is a big fight that we've been having, a big argument that we've been having, that if you're the only one in the world, how can other people be the only one in their world? You know, how can other people have a world which is, so to speak, outside of our world? And in effect, they don't.
But they cannot communicate anymore with anybody else.
That's right. Interesting, isn't it? Because you communicate because you are it. She thinks exactly what you think she thinks.
It's actually always talking to myself.
Yeah, you're always talking to yourself.
As a game.
Or I can understand it now when I think, okay, I am all, so I am the master of the dog, but since I'm all, I'm also the dog, and in the dog's eye, I created, or in the tree's eye, I created.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a sensitive thing.
It's in a way, I create my world with my features.
I create my world with my what?
With my features.
With your features, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the Bible something like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all these things are said in the Bible. All these things are said in the Bibles of the world. All these things are said by scientists. All these things, but we are just taking them at their word. We're just taking it at its actual meaning of what it means. It means that's it. You're number one, and you're the only one. See, if you're number one, how could there be a number two?
Yeah.
And what would the number two be like? And would the number two be willing to be number two? You can't tell Gertrude anything. Gertrude's number one. She knows how to run her world. She knows how to run your world, too, because she created you. And she's going to create you as good. You know, when Gertrude created herself going down to Cameroon, she went down to Cameroon, and what did she do? She went down there, and she was treated like a queen. Everybody just gathered her into the fold, right? And gave her dresses, and gave her attention, and held her up to all sorts of opportunities to be the mistress of the place, and maybe even stay down there if she wanted to. But she had they just loved her, because she created them loving her. She created them giving her a good time, and you know, respecting her, and loving her. And then she, in turn, also loved them. And that was a mutual thing. And so every one of those people she created doing just the thing. She created that mayor standing up there saying, blah, 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 blah. And now you, young man, this is your woman. And she will do what you tell her to do. And if you tell her to do anything, she'll do it, you know. And, of course, Martin wasn't even hearing this because it was in French. But yet Gertrude knew what she was saying. Gertrude had a deep, because Gertrude had created her. And he had created her doing this because he wanted to see how her son would respond to that sort of thing. Yeah, I think that Adrian would have loved it. Martin is not the kind who's going to take advantage of it. But Adrian would have loved it. But that's another story again. Maybe we have to get Adrian a girl from the Cameroon, huh? But this is fun stuff. This is marvelous stuff. To come to this realization and come to it gently, but realize you're number one, you're the only one, and you're creating everything in your world as the number one that you are, and you're having every grand experience just the way you are. It is fantastic.
Well, that's why it is so important that I love myself unconditionally.
Unconditionally. You do not have the capacity to love anybody else unconditionally. You have only the capacity to love yourself unconditionally. And then you create everyone else according to your unconditional love.
Yeah.
And everyone else is fantastic and glorious. Because you have created them that way, and they're your creation. They're your puppets. They're your little marionettes. But it's wonderful. It's wonderful. But you're not going to do anything evil. You're not going to do anything destructive. You're not going to do anything possessive. You're just going to be yourself, and they are yours. You know. They are whatever you create them to be, and. What you create them to be is your spiritual concept. Because now we take another step. You are spiritually perfect. That's all you can be. And everybody in your world is spiritually perfect. And everybody in your world is absolutely fulfilled right now. They have no need for anything. They have no desire for anything. They just exist to fulfill you, to fulfill your idea. Now, how would Gertrude create the Cameroon? What kind of government would she create for the Cameroon? She's really not too interested in government. So therefore, whatever government's there is just fine with her. That's what she sees as perfect. How does Gertrude create the women of the Cameroon? Being loving, gentle, kind, and all that good stuff? With a few talents or a few programs that are not consistent with what Gertrude has chosen herself to live in Switzerland. But that doesn't mean Gertrude doesn't have those same principles in her own mind. You ask Gertrude the question, could you live in Switzerland under the laws of Switzerland? And your answer is,
yes.
She is. Could you live in Cameroon under the laws of the Cameroon?
Yes.
Yes. No? You said yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. You shook your head no, and you said yes. Okay. I was reading that. And yes, you know. Yes. Why could she live under the laws of the Cameroon? Because she created it. That's her creation. And, you know, the lady mayor there with her big ribbon saying she's the mayor on her, and all the other people there, if Gertrude were in Cameroon, say, for a week or two, and was going to stay, a permanent resident, do you know what would happen to Gertrude?
She'd be the mayor.
She'd be the mayor. She'd be the queen. And really, and this is not kidding, but she would, because she is so harmonious wherever she goes in any world that she goes into, because she doesn't go into a world that she's not harmonious with. She goes into every world. Now, if she went into a world that she wasn't harmonious with, what would happen?
She doesn't.
It would be harmonious.
Oh, okay.
It'd be harmonious. But now, really, if Gertrude chose, in fact, in Embettingen, If you wanted to be the mayor of Embettingen, say it. Ebmating.
Gen.
Gemeindebauer.
if she, that doesn't matter. Hey.
Commune.
The community Mauer.
It's a commune.
Yeah.
No, but the thing, hey, don't worry about it. If you wanted to be the mayor of the place, they would have a mayor. It would be a stat that it would have a mayor, if that would be your choice. Now, Greg heard that and he said, no, and it stopped. Now, that's positive thinking. That's being a positive master and really being in charge.
Shut up.
But seriously, if you wanted to be the mayor, you'd be it. Because you have that capacity, because you're the creator of your city, your set, your whatever. Ebmettingen. I'll pronounce it a lot one day and remember it easily. It's a lot of fun. So, wait, what does it stand for? Does it stand for Gertrude Suter lives here?
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yes?
Yes. That sounds good, doesn't it? Gertrude Suter lives here. Or Gertrude Suter dwells here. Like the king dwells here, you know. Very good, very good. Okay. Now, you're ready for that?
Yes.
Right. I like that, too. And Stefan, are you ready for that?
Yeah.
And where does Stefan dwell?
Inside me.
That's true, too. But campus is what I thought you'd say. But inside him. So wherever he goes, he's the mayor, right?
Yeah.
Wherever you go, you're running the show, and you're the president. President. Hey, President of the United States. Move over, Mr. Bushy. Mr. George.
See?
Yeah, George Saint-Germain, too, huh? Yeah, another Saint-Germain, George.
J.R.
Yeah, that too. Any of you have any questions now on what we've been talking about? Do you see the value of talking about it? Do you see the value of thinking about it?
Yeah, it's very important because there is no blaming anymore.
There cannot be. Mm-hmm.
No, we know that since a long time, but
right. It's
sometimes good to be reminded.
Now you're seeing why. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to soak it in.
That's
deeper.
Right. That's right.
Knowing it intellectually is one thing.
Sure.
Living it.
It is beautiful, though.
And what can help to live it? Would that be a good idea to every time, like, slip into that person, that dog, that plant,
and think
that's me, and think in that plant, sort of, you know,
love.
Like I get dressed with that other thing.
Yeah. You put on the gown of the tree,
yeah,
or the dog, or whatever.
And then I still think as I would think.
Well, the dog thinks as you think. See, that's the thing. That dog is thinking just the way you think.
Okay, yeah.
Now,
the
way you create them,
right? You create a different behavior, let's say.
You cannot create a different behavior unless you are a different behavior. So you may have many behaviors within yourself.
But to get that different behavior, would that be a help to think myself into the dog and think I am the dog and...
Think myself into the dog. You already are the dog.
Yeah.
You
know. Express myself.
No, I know what you're saying. This is difficult because if you're all, you're the dog.
Yeah.
Now.
You see yourself
as
lifting your leg outside.
As an exercise, sort of.
Yeah.
Because if I stay here and look at the dog, then I'm still and then have sort of this separation.
That's right.
So how can I get over that separation?
Because you start looking from the dog's eyes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, how do you look at the dog from the dog's eyes? What does the dog see? Number one, for instance. He sees black and white, right?
Who cares?
I'm just saying, she sees from the eyes of the dog. And so the dog... Now, do you like that?
Well, I like colors.
Then the dog sees with color. Does the dog have to see in black and white only?
No.
Why does the dog see in black and white?
Because some
scientists
some
who've taken...
So like
now, Rover, do you see color?
Yes.
I see everything. What would you answer me? Yes. Now, why should he not answer that he sees color? Now, what if we go to the scientist that you created who has him see black and white, and you say to the scientist, which is yourself, why does Rover see in black and white? And the scientist would say, well, according to the test we took, it shows that he did. Now, we can tell that birds can see in color. And we can tell that snakes can see in color. But we know that dogs see in black and white. Interesting, huh? Now, why do you create that situation? Irene, why not create everything in your world being just as good as you create yourself being? Wouldn't that be nice? The plants are just as worthy, as just as much of whatever you are as you are. The dogs, the snakes, the rabbits, the houses, the trees, the clouds, the birds, the bees, they all see just what you see. Neat, huh?
It's actually just what I do.
Yes. I know.
It's just how much I appreciate myself. Yeah.
You can only love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. That is in itself.
Well, that's why I always admire Greg when he gets down on all fours with a dog or a kid or something like that, and he just gets right down to their level. Have you got on your belly with a snake yet? But, you know, gets right down to their level and talks with them and shares with them and loves them, and because they're him and he's them.
That's why he takes a letter when he talks to a horse.
Takes a letter when he talks to what?
A ladder.
Or ladder. Oh, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. That's beautiful. That's lovely. Okay, anything further? All right. I think we've done very nicely. Thank you for being such a beautiful group.